Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, we open with some national stories from Public News Service, including the highlights, or some would say lowlights, from the presidential debate, the latest on Hurricane Matthew, a death penalty case before the Supreme Court, and celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day in some areas today instead of Columbus Day. We'll also tell you about a new facility coming soon to help the homeless and the hungry in El Cajon. And then, if you're confused about those 17 California ballot propositions, we've got a clip today, courtesy of calvoter.org, that sums them all up for you in a song. Our newsmaker interviews today are with two more candidates from that hotly contested Grossmont Healthcare District race, incumbent Michael Emerson and Priscilla Schreiber. Plus, we'll tell you about a new law to help find missing people with developmental disabilities. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, October 10th, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. Clinton and Trump squabble in round two of the debates. The Southeast works to pick up the pieces with Hurricane Matthew out to sea, and cities around the U.S. celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day as an awakening. Those stories and more coming up. It began without a handshake, and the second presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton ended as one of the most bitter in history. The presidential hopefuls fielded questions from moderators Anderson Cooper and Martha Raddatz, as well as members of the public during the 90-minute face-off at Washington University, St. Louis. Trump entered the debate reeling from the revelation of a 2005 video in which he spoke of women in lewd and sexually aggressive terms. And Trump dismissed the matter when asked.
This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people.
He has said that the video doesn't represent who he is, but I think it's clear to anyone who heard it that it represents exactly who he is.
Clinton did not take the bait when Trump delivered scathing attacks against her and her former husband's infidelities and actions.
When I hear something like that, I am reminded of what my friend Michelle Obama advised us all. When they go low, you go high.
Trump stepped up his attack on Clinton over her private email server, vowing to prosecute if he's elected.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
In the final question of the night, the candidates were asked by a voter to mention something they respected in one another. Clinton said she respects Trump's children, and Trump called Clinton a fighter.
His children are incredibly able and devoted, and I think that says a lot about Donald.
I will say this about Hillary. She doesn't quit. She doesn't give up. I respect that.
A CNN ORC poll found 57% of debate watchers thought Clinton won, compared to 34% who thought Trump came out on top. The U.S. Supreme Court is expected to hear two death penalty cases this term, and while they'll lean on constitutional law to reach their decision, half of the country does not support the punishment.
New research released by Pew finds the number of people in favor of the death penalty stand at the lowest in four decades. Kristen Collins with the Center for Death Penalty Litigation says with more than 150 people on death row exonerated from their crimes in recent years, including nine in North Carolina, shifting opinion often starts with a broken system.
You just can't trust the system to get it right. And when you can't trust that basic thing, that they have the right people on death row, then it's kind of hard to support the death penalty.
In the 1990s, according to Pew, 8 in 10 Americans supported capital punishment. The report goes on to show that while support has declined across the spectrum, Republicans favor the punishment by more than 2-1 compared with Democrats. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
Parts of the U.S. southeast coast could face days of flooding in the areas pummeled by Hurricane Matthew. The weakened storm moved out to sea Sunday. 19 people across four states died as the result of the storm's destructive forces. More than 2 million households and businesses were without power, most in Florida and South Carolina. Those ravaged by the storm are turning their focus today toward recovery and cleanup. A federal judge has ordered U.S. immigration officials to stop requesting that local law enforcement detain certain people without a warrant to determine their immigration status. We get the details from Mark Richardson.
The ruling adds fuel to a debate in Texas and other states over so-called sanctuary cities in which local officials shelter undocumented immigrants from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, officials. Bob Leibel, director of Grassroots Leadership, says while the ruling initially applies only to 6 Midwestern states, he believes it will eventually apply everywhere, including Texas.
We're not entirely sure what that's going to mean for some of the detainers that are issued on nights and weekends here in Texas. We also think that the underlying assertion of the court is correct and that that could have the impact of affecting other courts around the country.
The order, issued last week in Illinois, bars ICE from requesting that local jailers detain potentially deportable prisoners for 48 hours when they would otherwise be free to leave. Immigrant advocates have long claimed that ICE holds are illegal and often put on people punished for only minor offenses. ICE officials did not comment on the ruling.
The Pentagon says two missiles were fired Sunday at a U.S. Navy destroyer in the Red Sea from territory occupied by Iran-allied Yemeni rebels, but they missed. The two missiles were fired over the course of an hour and impacted the water before reaching the ship. No injuries or damage were reported. While some cities are celebrating Columbus Day today, others are celebrating the people he found when he came to America with Indigenous Peoples Day instead. Eric Tagadoff has more from Montana.
Dozens of cities across the country, including Bozeman and Missoula, have proclaimed the second Monday of October a city holiday to honor Native peoples. Last March, Bozeman Mayor Carson Taylor established Indigenous Peoples Day, and Marcia Small, activist and adjunct professor at Montana State University, is taking the reins this year to coordinate the celebration. She says we shouldn't call the growing number of cities around the country celebrating the holiday a trend.
I've heard through various media that it's a trend, and I would prefer to stay away from that word. It is not a trend. Let's call it an awakening. It's almost an interpretive paradox of history. That Columbus is a hero. That is not so true.
I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Jonathan Getz with news about a major new facility in the works to help underprivileged people in El Cajon. The Salvation Army is embarking on a massive new community center building in El Cajon. A year and a half ago, the Salvation Army started raising money for the $5.4 million expansion to double its 2.3-acre site on South Anza Street. Currently, the El Cajon Salvation Army serves 40,000 people annually with programs including a homework center, after-school and youth development programs, food and clothing distribution, basic needs support, and a senior nutrition program that feeds 70 to 100 seniors daily. Many of its volunteers come from the site's Silvercrest Senior Housing Building, helping the Salvation Army keep its staffing costs low. The new community center will include a food choice pantry to reduce waste and counsel clients, a social services center, teaching kitchen, gymnasium, youth center, chapel, classroom, and meeting spaces. Umbert Cabrera, a member of the Salvation Army's advisory board, announced last week that the Salvation Army had raised enough money to secure its first $1 million in matching funds provided by the Zabel Foundation from the founder of Cubic Corporation, a San Diego transportation and defense company. You can visit SalvationArmyElCajon.com to learn more and see a flyby of Captains Daryl Norton, Terry Masango, and Sean Kelsey's mission to transform lives in East County and San Diego.
If you're confused about California's 17 ballot initiatives, you're not alone. But now CalVoter.org has come up with a unique way to help. They've written a song that in just 5 minutes explains the highlights of each of those ballot propositions.
Oh, we're having an election, November 8th today. There's 17 propositions, come vote and have your say.
Prop 51's the first one, $9 billion in school bonds.
52 deals with state hospital fees and Medi-Cal matching funds. Prop 53 requires, should the state want revenue bonds, to first ask California voters for their permission.
If we pass Prop 54, the public gets to see all legislative meetings with more bill transparency.
In 2012, the voters passed Prop 30, which requires a state income tax increase that's ready to expire.
Prop 55 extends those tax increases 12 more years. Without it, extra funds for schools would disappear. It's a proposition song. You should all be singing along, 'cause the ballot's too darn long.
Prop 56 would enact a new tobacco tax. If it passes, smokers pay $2 per pack.
Prop 57's next, and it deals with crime. If it's passed, nonviolent offenders could do much less time.
Remember back in 98 when voters, they did pass Prop 227, which requires English-only classes.
Prop 58 amends that law, and if passed, would instead let parents and local schools decide which method they think's best.
Next, we have an advisory vote. If you pass Prop 59, we're saying that we don't agree with Citizens United.
And lawmakers should enact new laws to regulate corporate donations on behalf of candidates. It's a proposition song. You should all be singing along, 'cause the ballot's too darn long.
Prop 60 is about safe sex, and if we think there ought to be requirements for participants in the adult film industry.
Prop 61's about drug pricing and seeks to regulate the amount spent when prescription drugs are purchased by the state.
Some think capital punishment's wrong, some don't take this view. The state's death penalty's repealed if we pass Prop 62.
Supporters of gun owners' rights don't like Prop 63. Proponents say vote yes to support more firearm safety.
Proposition 64 asks voters if we ought to regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana.
Prop 65 is sponsored by the plastics industry. If passed, grocers will not pocket carry-out bag fees.
The money would instead go towards state wildlife conservation. Opponents say the true goal here is mass voter confusion. It's a proposition song. You should all be singing along, 'cause the ballot's too darn long.
Next, we have another prop about the death penalty. And this didn't happen accidentally.
Unlike Prop 62, 66 would not repeal. Instead, if passed, those sentenced to death have less time to appeal.
We've come to the last measure. This one's a referendum. It seeks to nullify a law. It's called Prop 67.
Well, just a few years back, lawmakers passed a plastic bag ban. Vote yes on 67 if you think that's a good plan.
You don't have to vote on every prop. See, voting's not a test. Just remember to vote, my friends, and try to do your best. If you want more information, just log yourself online.
There's a whole lot more at calvoter.org.
We're open all the time.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, we are continuing our coverage of the Grossmont Healthcare District race, talking about healthcare issues that are important to you in East County. We've previously interviewed four of the six candidates running, and today we have two more. We have incumbent Michael Emerson and challenger Priscilla Schreiber. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a wonderful hideout. was pretty easy to find. First time ever doing an interview like this on a radio, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, we're glad to have you here. We think it's important to focus on these local down-ticket races. There's so much attention paid to President and Congress, but really these local races are about all the issues that impact people the most. Mm-hmm. And Priscilla, we're delighted that you could join us today as well.
Thank you, Miriam. And we go way back as far as doing interviews. And I just want to thank you for always bringing to the forefront those issues that matter to East County and my service on the Grossmont Union High School District Board for 16 years. And so it's always a pleasure to be able to have those discussions about education. So thank you for your staying with us.
Well, you're very welcome. Michael, I'd like to start with you. As the incumbent, can you tell us about the achievements or actions on the Grossmont Healthcare District Board during your tenure that you're most proud of and would like to share with our listeners?
Oh, sure. 8 years is a lot of work. I didn't think I'd get started out right on the achievements, but there are a lot of them that the healthcare district has done.
Mm-hmm.
And you know about the ballot measures that we've put forth in 2006 for the bond initiatives to improve and modernize the hospital.
Right. You have a beautiful new emergency room and the cardiac care center. And
I can list them all, bullet talks, but I think what I'll do is I'll run down, start with what I did as I arrived.
Yeah, that would be good. Some of the initiatives that you took the lead on.
Well, the first, I was appointed to my seat at first for 8 months. 5 months I was an appointee, and then I ran and won my seat.
Mm-hmm.
And during the 5 months, I was appointed as chair of the GEO Bond Committee. And during that chairmanship, we constructed 90 new beds for the critical care unit that we sorely needed to help decant the congestions in the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
So I chaired that program, and we finished it on time. It was a little over budget, but we were able to work with some of the construction companies, and we discovered that maybe there were some things that could have been done better, and we were able to get a return of $1.5 million of tax dollars.
Wow.
To put it back over.
Very good.
Within budget, actually under budget a little bit. So that was the first project. Then you know about the central energy plant that we built.
That was amazing. You got the hospital's energy bill from, what, something like $189,000 a month to zero?
Right. When we went on, we put the unit online a few months ago and passed all inspections, of course, and brought that into the system. And we now are, the operating budget of the hospital is about $150,000 average, mm-hmm, less. And we're generating our own power, and we're completely off the grid. But we also have the ability to sell power back to the grid if we so desire.
Wow.
Which
so we could be buying power from the hospital district.
We'd be buying power from the hospital district, and we could be using that money to further increase the benefit for health care in the district.
Very good. Well, that sounds wonderful. Priscilla, as one of the challengers, and I should mention there are 3 seats open so people can vote for 3 of the 6 running here. Priscilla, as the challenger, I'd like to ask you to tell us a little bit about your qualifications and why you chose, of all the things to run for, the healthcare district board.
Well, thank you, Miriam. Well, as you know, in the Grossmont Union High School District, due to redistricting, I lost my seat or my ability to run for re-election because I was paired with another board member who had 2 more years on the Grossmont board.
Right. We should clarify that. There were 2 in the same district,
right,
and you know they can't both run, and so the guy whose seat happened to be up last,
right,
gets to stay, and you know, but you served there for a lot of years, and you really had a reputation as a watchdog, speaking out on a lot of things, you know, really calling for more oversight.
Well, construction is my background. My husband and I own a framing construction business, and I've worked for general contractors ever since I got out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So when we decided to go out for a bond initiative, much like the Grossmont Healthcare District, I have an advantage, and I think some of the board members, as Michael, you have an advantage with some of your background going into that. So you know the,
yes,
type of things to look for, the questions to ask. And so I have that as my as a qualification for oversight. Not to say they're not doing a great job, because I think they're doing a fantastic job, and the incumbents and the challengers are all well qualified for this position.
That's good. You actually mentioned when we were talking off air before that you had taken a look at the oversight report for the healthcare district, and you had a nice compliment compared to the district you came out of, where even a grand jury wasn't too happy about the oversight that their board was doing.
Yeah, I looked at the website. I've been traveling through the different pages of the website, and I have to say it's so user-friendly. And there's so much information on there, and just a wealth of information for me as a challenger to kind of get grounded in what the healthcare district is all about. And their Citizens Bond Oversight report that they put out, I guess annually, like what we're required by law in the Grossmont Union High School District, is so comprehensive, and it's just at a glance, just so much more comprehensive for the readers.
Yeah, I'd like to add that. Thank you for that. We were just recognized by the ACHD, Hospital Association of California, for our transparency, and the website was a big part of that.
Very good. So I'd like to ask each of you, if you are elected, or in your case, Michael, reelected, do you have any specific goals for things that you would like to achieve on the board during the upcoming term? Michael, let's start with you on that one.
Oh, there's so much that we can do. Where do you want to start? It's an ongoing thing. Healthcare and the needs for the public and the needs for our constituents. What part of the line items of the service that you want to look at? Mental health, drug abuse, even homeless is the healthcare initiatives that are out there. There's many, many things. Like, we have one of the things that we've done since I've been there is we've put in a new pharmacy and test lab, a 13,000 square foot for clinical testing, state of the art, which could reduce the cost for our constituents. That's a big issue too, the cost. So I'd like to see that, but a main goal for the trend is you see the downward pressure for reimbursements coming to hospitals and clinics in all
very
lines.
Difficult.
So I think that we could partner with Health and Human Services in East County and try to get population health and communication to the public about where they can go other than coming to our emergency room.
Yeah, I understand they're building a new urgent care center, I've heard, so that's a good step.
The urgent care center is in development. It'll be a full-on urgent care, which should decant about 35,000 visits to the hospital in a year. We have more than 100,000 visits, and studies, our internal studies of the hospital have determined that 35% or 35,000 of them really don't need to be there.
Priscilla, how about you? Do you have any specific goals if you're elected?
Being on a governance team for 16 years, there's not a lot of difference other than your customer service is pretty much the same. Your teachers are like your doctors and your staff, and your community outreach, your ability to have joint use with your communities and partner with many of the people in your community is really no different from the school district. And in fact, we partner with the Grossmont Healthcare District. They grant scholarships to our students who are taking the Summer Institute to find out exactly what pathway they want to take in healthcare. And so I was a part of that when we started that, I think in 2004, 2005. So education is huge to me, and I understand that, you know, we have our health occupation, our healthcare program and pathway in the Grossmont Union High School District, and I know that the Grossmont Hospital District, also healthcare district, they want to pursue that as well and continue that. So I think that needs to grow. And one of the articles that I just posted, that because of the baby boomers and the things that we're experiencing with research and medicine and so many things like that, is going to constitute our efforts to partner and educate and have more education pathways.
That is something that we have in common about the education and the workforce development. And we do grant scholarships, or we give grants to colleges for the scholarships. One of the things I've done to refine that, though, is that because it's tax dollars that we're investing in that workforce, I felt that it was like any other investment that we have to track and maintain the outcomes and see how it goes. So what I did in the policies and procedures is I developed an auditing system for the healthcare district to communicate with the college, or at least have the college communicate with us, who those recipients were of those scholarships every year.
Very good.
They're to report to us, and then we embedded in our policies and procedures at the district that the CFO ask every year, so that if those people change, that follow-through keeps going.
What was your background, Mike, before you came onto the board?
Before I came on the board, I'm a registered ophthalmic dispenser through the state board licensing. I have a private practice.
Very good.
I've been practicing in La Mesa for 29 years.
Okay, so you bring a perspective, a doctor's perspective to the healthcare.
I bring the provider healthcare perspective to healthcare, but before that, I worked in administration of large organizations, large healthcare, visual healthcare. I worked in the first California Eye Care, which is the first HMO for vision.
I don't have the kind of background that my colleagues do or the other candidates as far as retired registered nurse or those that are in the healthcare business. But what I do bring with me is a lot of education in being a board governance. But before that, I am very active in finding out what it is that my role is. I was very much involved with the California School Boards Association and elected for 10 years as a delegate to the California School Boards Association, where we go to Sacramento and discuss policy. So it's very important to me to understand my role if I'm going to represent my constituents. So I represent constituents on the boards that I run for.
Very good. Yeah, and I should mention, I and my own family members have at various times been patients at Grossmont. So moving on to talk a little bit about issues, I think most people who've been patients there that I've talked to have had very positive experiences for the most part. The one concern that does seem to come up over and over is that Sharp Grossmont Hospital is the only emergency room in East County, other than maybe Kaiser, but it's really the only one that's open to the general public. And because of that, the emergency room has had problems with, crowding and long waits. It's improved some with the new facility, but it's not, 100%. So I guess let's start with Michael, since you're the incumbent, maybe you can provide some perspective on what else can or should be done to try to reduce the overcrowding, or is it even possible short of building a new hospital somewhere?
Oh, no, we don't have to do that. We're fine. Okay. Just want to add to the, a lot of people don't realize that I'm the incumbent of the healthcare district, but I'm also the only director that sits on the four committees that inside operate the hospital.
Oh, okay.
I sit on the Quality and Safety Board. I sit on the Facilities Board. I sit on the Finance Committee, and I'm also on the Corporate Board.
So you're a busy
So
guy.
I'm inside the hospital, and I hear all the issues from inside. So sometimes when I can't make a comment, it might be because I'm talking about proprietary information.
I understand.
But as far as the emergency room and the decanting of what's going on there, we have very good news there. Our new CEO, Scott Evans, has implemented a lot of new policies and methodologies for handling that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is, first, we have to understand the fact that we have 10,000 visits a year, and 35,000 of those don't belong in our ED. So what did we do? We moved some of the rooms and some of the procedure rooms around so that we could create what they call a fast track.
Mm-hmm.
And then so when the patient comes in, they're triaged immediately to see what their needs are. And then we take those and treat them in the emergency room if that's where they need it, and move them into a bed, or we move them down into the fast track where we can take care of what their needs are and then find out where to get them going to get their problem taken care of. But one of the issues is that it takes so long to see a provider.
Yeah.
Well, now we're close to where any visitor to our emergency room sees a provider within 15 minutes.
Wow, that's a big improvement. I know years ago I was there and waited hours.
Yeah, you'll have triage nurses and staff to find out what the needs are, and within 15 minutes they'll see a provider and they'll have a full assessment.
That's excellent.
And then the other is the bed czar. We hired a nurse to go up into the hospital and track all the discharges so that there's any delays or any reasons why the discharge isn't moving along, to move the patient out into the community, either where they're going to go home and finish their care or go to a patient, build a patient home, or create a place where we can track later how they're doing after they leave the hospital so that we don't have a readmission. Those are other things. Then the bed czar clears a bed, and then we move a patient in and they're faster. And so the throughput to the hospital is much faster, much better, Patient satisfaction scores are up. Doctor satisfaction and staff scores are up as well.
Very good. Priscilla, do you have any comments on the emergency room wait times?
Yeah, well, it is interesting. I know that that was an issue many years ago. And just recently when I think I shared with you that when I had pneumonia, my daughter, she said, we're going to go out to Frost Street because, you know, she hasn't been to the emergency room. So all she could think about was that, yeah, it's always that overcrowding. You're not going to get my mom in time. And so having the conversation with some of the board members and with the CEO or CFO there, found out all these great things are happening. So I'm excited about, because this was an issue, and when we had a forum before and we had talked about how that has been a concern, it just sounds like they're just doing a great job. But I would say that I was, I brought up before that the Easterly area out in Alpine, there was a conversation with former Assemblyman Jay Lesur, who is on the corporate board for the hospital. And we had talked about years ago combining a career pathway and maybe a burn unit with having an auxiliary hospital care or whatever out there and make it a pathway, because it's so remote out there, and then to get down the hill to the Grossmont Hospital. And I think that's part of an expansion. Mm-hmm. As one of my goals would be, and I know that the board members have talked about that, it's nothing new to them, but I would just hope that we could have some kind of, if the laws change, or we could work with some partnerships. I know Viejas has a clinic out there, and I was just speaking with the vice chair yesterday and talked about, wouldn't it be wonderful, because I'm all about joint use and joint partnerships, and if there's any way possible in accordance with the law or whatever we could do to maybe help us get something in the backcountry.
Wonderful. Yeah. That's a good idea.
I'll just add, if you do make it to the board, then you can jump right in on the program, because we've been doing frontier medicine for a couple of years, at least the 8 years that I've been on. I've been supporting and Mountain Health is our lead frontier provider out there.
It is a real issue. I know that if someone has an accident on one of these remote highways, for example, even with Life Flight, it takes a while, and sometimes you can't fly Life Flight because of bad weather or something, and it's an issue if you have to come in by ambulance.
We do have the helipad, but it's probably faster to take them in an ambulance that far out. But we just so you know, that on the Frontier Medicine Score, we just provided $1 million for Mountain Health to do all the infill and buy all the equipment for their new facility out in Buckman Springs.
Very interesting. A lot of people may not realize that the Grossmont District, you know, is involved that far out in the back country.
Interesting. Your map goes way far out there that people are not familiar
Tecate.
With.
Tecate. Yeah. It goes pretty far. Yeah, it's 750 square miles.
Huge.
And 500,000 lives, and it's probably the biggest voting block in Southern California.
And you're the second largest or busiest ER in the state
of California.
In the state, probably.
Yeah.
Easy to say.
Yeah.
It's very busy. No dull moments over there.
So you've taken on that challenge. I think it's great.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show why these positions on this board
are
so important.
On that busyness, you know that I would say this is almost a miracle what Scott Evans has done with the bypass that we've been going through. We have about 3,267 hours of bypass at our hospital.
My.
That's where patients can't come because we don't have a bed.
Mm-hmm. So that happened to me, actually. I was in a car accident in El Cajon, and they said Grossmont was turning away patients that day, so I wound up being taken to Sharp. Well, I was treated very well.
But that's a problem, because it hits the revenue on the bottom line. You know? Mm-hmm. So what he's done is, with this fast track and these bed czars and opening up and throughput, we've virtually reduced, in a very short time, the bypass to zero.
Oh, that's very good to hear.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Excellent. Let's move on, if we could. Now, there's another issue where the hospital itself drew some criticism. The background on this, some of you listeners may have heard about it. The hospital was trying to catch a physician who they suspected of stealing drugs, an anesthesiologist. And so they put an undercover video camera in a woman's operating room. The doctor was charged, and eventually, I guess the charges against him were dropped for various reasons, but there was a privacy concern that emerged out of that. Some of the women were videotaped without clothes on, you know, childbirth and so forth, and a handful of them, while the hospital attempted to redact out sensitive stuff, they missed a few, and there were a handful of them that did go to state regulators and even to the attorney of the doctor, and I understand, I believe there's a lawsuit over that right now. So, Priscilla, let's start with you on this one. As someone who's done a lot of oversight, do you think that more should have been done there to protect the patient privacy? And are there any changes you think should be done for the future to, prevent that sort of thing?
As a school board member, we've gotten a lot of those kind of instances where there's privacy involved in protecting the students or protecting a teacher in cases that have come down. And some of those things are discussed behind closed doors, but I would say it's always happens. This happens, and then you have to address it, and you're going to address it where it can never happen again. So I'm sure the Grossmont Healthcare District, I guess it's in a lawsuit. I'm not that familiar with the case, but it may be out of the Grossmont Healthcare District's hands. But as far as what's in their hands, is there a policy that they'll set so this doesn't happen again?
And Michael, since you're on the board, obviously you're not affiliated with the hospital itself, with the healthcare district board, but I'm curious, when did the healthcare district become aware of that? Was it before or after the camera was placed in the room? And what steps has, if any, what power does the board have to address this, or what steps are being taken?
Yeah, as you know, the Grossmont Healthcare District leases the hospital to a Sharp System, and they operate the hospital. And when there's a lawsuit, this director automatically turns off any inquiry into it, because when lawyers get involved, we have to back out and let them handle it.
So you don't feel that you can comment on it?
I actually can't comment and shouldn't, because it could cause a problem. The case is ongoing, and there is a lot of misinformation going around about it, but I'm just going to step aside. Not that I don't want to tell you. I'm open to share anything, but I have a feeling I could cause a lot of trouble if I make the wrong statement. So let me bypass. I have a pass on that one,
if
I could.
Can I ask Michael, as a challenger, and I so appreciate his 8 years of knowledge and service on the board, is that something that the Grossmont Healthcare District would set new policy or oversight, or is that the hospital itself, Sharp?
Yeah, that's providers. Those are hospital providers. There's a corporate board there that actually will be handling all the policy changes, and I'll hear those as they develop and as they are developing, and I also hear the case as it's going along. But
would the board have some input over that if they thought the hospital hadn't done enough, just theoretically speaking?
Yeah, we have input on everything.
Okay,
but we just there's just some things that, because of the lease arrangement, we can't get involved in all that.
Okay. Let's move on to the next issue. Now, Priscilla, I understand that you wanted to talk about a couple of ballot initiatives on the statewide ballot that could affect the healthcare district and the hospital specifically. One of those is Prop 64, which would legalize recreational marijuana. And I'll let you go first on this one, Priscilla. Tell us what your thoughts are about that.
Thank you. Well, being on the Grossmont Union High School District Board and a part of the Delegate Assembly to the California School Boards Association, we just had the people on 64 make a presentation. And our concern is, at CSBA, statewide, we have a policy for the whole child. So it's not just legislative issues or educational issues. We look at initiatives that will affect the whole child, as we do as a board in the Grossmont District. So it's their welfare and the things that are happening. I know this is age 21 and it's recreational and things like that, but you have little kids. There are news articles. There's a history of things going on in Colorado and Washington where this is getting in the hands of minors. And so we have a real concern about that. And we're glad that the healthcare district had a concern enough, too, as well, to take a position on it.
So I understand that in Colorado and Washington State, what they've had is more children winding up in the ER, particularly where maybe they got their hands on the edibles, a marijuana cookie, or these things that look like candy, not realizing, the dosing issues with that.
And the other thing is that we've worked so hard in our district for our healthy kids surveys and reducing the alcohol and the drugs on the campuses and those type of things that go on where kids can get a hold of them. And so to bring this on, they can advertise in prime time for recreational marijuana. And we fought for years, many people did, against tobacco being advertised during prime time. And so we still have those issues, and this is just going to add another issue and make it, our kids are going to think it's normal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Michael, I understand that the healthcare board just voted and actually took a position. Tell us about that and tell us how you voted.
We, the Grossmont Healthcare District, just opposed. We took a position to oppose recreational use of marijuana. And it's for all the reasons that Priscilla just outlined. And of course, your study is the Colorado, all the problems that they've had with it. Most of it's the children and the unwanted uses, and then the impacts on automobile accidents and emergency room visits.
Yeah, there seemed to be a lot of negatives. There was one, I guess, positive that was a surprise that came out of it, and that was a reduction in the number of emergency room treatments for people who had overdosed on opioids and narcotics. Apparently, at least some people actually stepped down and instead of taking a narcotic prescription or street drug, were taking marijuana. So it'd be interesting if it does pass to see if one offsets the other at all. But I agree. I mean, I think there's a lot of concerns, particularly with children and with the potential for impaired driving that people should.
It's just a lot of impacts on society, and as a healthcare director, trying to soften those impacts in our communities, what we try to do. And if it passes, we'll deal with it just like we do with all the other problems in our society.
Mm-hmm. The other proposition that Priscilla mentioned she'd like to talk about is Prop 56. This is a measure that would impose a tax on tobacco, an added tax on tobacco, and it would be used for different sorts of health care funding. Michael, I'm going to let you take that one first. Can you explain to us exactly how those funds would be used if it passes and what your position and or the board's position is on that one?
Well, I read that a long time ago, and I sat on the Taxpayers Association for East County as well and studied it there. The tax is to help offset the costs for the Medi-Cal patients, the more underserved patients in our community. So we're supporting the tax, and the district is, and I also voted to support. So, and it's to help Medi-Cal patients, and it's stated in the proposition that...
Well, certainly smoking contributes to a lot of healthcare problems and a lot of added cost to the system, so that's, I guess, the rationalization for that.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is the high tax eventually will diminish the use of that because people won't want to pay the high cost, so eventually the tax and revenue will go away, which is a benefit for our health care as well.
So you must not be one of those candidates getting a lot of money from the big tobacco industry.
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Priscilla, what are your thoughts on Prop 61?
Yeah, well, I know that raising the price of cigarettes is a deterrent. It has worked, so I think adding the higher taxes, we hope that that's going to be an ongoing deterrent. But certainly the rise in health care issues has to be offset. So this is a good tax, I believe, and I don't support a lot of taxes. But I will say in the Grossmont Union High School District, we get TUPE grants, which is tobacco grants, to help our students who go through a program to quit smoking or using tobacco, any tobacco products. And we have a policy, but it's the vapor,
the vaping
and all of those type of things. Anything that's tobacco related, we have policy for that, and that's zero tolerance.
Okay, very good. We've seen a lot of changes in our healthcare system in recent years with the Affordable Care Act or what some would call Obamacare. I think most people would probably say there's been some positive and some negative come out of that. And there could be a lot of changes in the future, depending who wins the elections in Washington, D.C. We've heard everything from completely eliminating the Affordable Care Act altogether to trying to amend and improve it to the other extreme of going entirely to a single-payer healthcare for all type system. I would like to ask Michael, as an incumbent, what changes for better and or worse have you seen in the healthcare district as a result of the Affordable Care Act and sort of California's version of that?
Right. It started out the Affordable Care Act with the definition of what's affordable, which was pretty interesting matrix and formula for that. I can't recite it here now, but I know it was pretty low, 9% or less of somebody's income, and if they could afford it. But, the bad news was that the premiums have gone up now so much that people can't afford it.
Yeah,
and the first thing that the first thing we noticed was that people were paying for it because it was a law mandated that they had to have it, and, and they'd go buy their insurance and make the first payment and then not make the subsequent payments after that. So they'd still sometimes would arrive at our hospital uninsured. They're not as many, but it was low.
So it reduced the number of uninsured, but not as much as, some might have hoped it would.
And it helped the hospital in some ways that now that people were arriving that did have insurance. So our,
that brings
our
the cost
uninsured and underinsured
then,
dropped a little bit. So it helps. It helped the hospitals for a while. But it seems to be turning for a negative effect now.
Yeah, we're seeing some big insurers pull out of the market.
That's the big concern, is the big healthcare that are pulling out of the exchanges and not selling anymore. Mm-hmm. So now what are we going to do? So,
yeah, what's the answer? I mean, if you could be president for a day and get Congress to do your bidding, what do you think is the answer that would improve the problems without going back to maybe where we were before, where insurers could just deny anybody for any pre-existing condition? What's the answer?
Well, that's a hard question, but the groups are, and the minds that are working with that issue are talking about it, and they've been talking about it for a while. We could see the trend. We could see the way it was going, and we have to be out in front to try to meet that need. But one of the things I've been noticing is groups. I forget the exact term that they're calling, but it's where they put together a bundle. It's bundling of care and trying to find out what some of these employers might want and for their employees, and they'll bundle a bunch of line items for care.
And that's kind of the next thing to roll out, isn't it? I mean, they put off the employer component of the Affordable Care Act for a while, and is that sort of in the process now rolling out? Or?
That's the issue they're trying to weigh, is how to bundle these cares and package them. Each community has a different need of health care, and so they're working on bundling and how to charge for it and what services to provide and put in these bundles. Okay. And that's a big issue. Mm-hmm. And then it's just the Affordable Care Act is just going. The premiums are just too high, and in December 31st, when the federal fund matching for some of that
seems like
runs
especially
out.
The middle class especially seems to be getting really squeezed on that. It's was, I guess, a good thing if you're very poor that you could get something.
Right.
If you're very rich, you could probably afford a higher premium, but the people in the middle are a lot of them that I talk to are really
well the wealthy right the wealthy were there was a part in the Affordable Care Act where they were going to tax the wealthy a little more and the higher incomes and in the form of a Cadillac tax, but that they've taken that off the table now. Don't even
so the rest of us are all paying more as a result.
They don't want to talk about it at all during this election, and it's a hard issue to talk about now. But the hospital's doing something. You know, I mean, if anybody walks into our hospital or goes over the threshold and they're in, we take care of them, no matter whether they have insurance or not.
It does seem to be one of those issues where both parties sort of have blinders on. You know, have the Republicans saying all Obamacare bad, let's repeal the entire thing, but we don't really know what we would do instead. And then you have the Democrats saying Obamacare is a wonderful thing and we don't want to talk about any problems. Mm-hmm. We want to pretend there aren't any. And can we just actually acknowledge it? Maybe
if you come to the emergency room where you come and we don't ask you first, where's your insurance? We take care of what you have. We stabilize you and find ways to get you well and get you back out into society.
Yeah.
And the rest of that's business for the insurance companies and also for the politicians.
Priscilla, let's let you get a word in on this issue.
Sure, thank you. You're talking about the bundling. I know HSAs were a really big thing, your own self-healthcare accounts. If the legislatures would look at that more closely, I think that would be a huge benefit to the constituent as well as far as write-offs. And I watch family members who can't even afford Obamacare. They can't afford insurance at all. And those that do in my family that can afford somewhat, they're on Medicare or Medi-Cal, you have less and less providers out there who even take Medicare or Medi-Cal. So pre-existing is a huge issue. I support some way to address pre-existing. We have to, and to make healthcare a little bit more affordable. The other side of that is the drugs. One thing that they just recently have done is outlawed people going from one doctor to there's a name or a term for this.
Doctor shopping.
Doctor shopping, yeah, for prescriptions to keep filling prescriptions. That's a huge thing that probably would have helped a long time ago. It's been identified for years. So I think that's going to be a good thing. But I just think one of the things that you do in healthcare is you stabilize that patient, like Michael said, and you take care of our patients. But we have to make it affordable for all patients. I don't think Obamacare is going to work.
Yeah.
Totally. So.
All right. I would like to ask each of you if there's anything else we have not specifically asked about that you would like our listeners to know. Michael, let's let you go first.
Well, sure. Yeah, there's several things. I wanted to kind of delve into the finance part of the healthcare district and what we've done with your tax dollars. And, of course, you know about all the projects that we've been doing, remodeling some of the parts of the hospital that haven't been touched for many years, bringing that up to speed. We're nearly completed the new Heart and Vascular Center. And, in fact, we're dividing that up now between Sharp and the healthcare district as a public-private partnership to finish that project and complete it. That commitment that we've got from Sharp to complete the projects is a big deal for the healthcare district and for people that live in our district. And that ensures that project will be completed. We have three new cath labs coming in. A new hybrid operating room and an open heart surgery room.
Wow.
That's all be completed.
It's all very exciting.
And then the other important thing to understand, I think, is the Moody's rating for the district is an AA2 rating.
And, excellent.
And that says a lot about how we're managing your funds and overseeing your tax dollars. And then finally, with the talk of pension funds being underfunded and all that, Grossmont Healthcare District has no unfunded liability at this time.
Well, that's quite an accomplishment to this day and age.
I think you'll search far to find another agency that's completely paid.
Thank you for sharing that. Priscilla, what else would you like our listeners to know?
Yeah, I'd like to add that, you know, like I said before, when I venture into public service, it's really important for me to find out everything that I can to best serve in my role in the capacity as a school board member and now running Should I Be Elected to the Healthcare District. I will tell you that I've had a great amount of experience in the different legislative issues that we have to prosecute, HR. HR is huge, collective bargaining. That's so huge when you're dealing with your clientele, your teachers, and to make sure that we're giving them the tools of what the trade that they need. So I don't think that's any different with the healthcare district. We want to make sure that we're giving our staff, our doctors, our nurses, all the tools of the trade that they need as far as working with a lease agreement and things like that. And that's a perfect example of a partnership working together, I will tell you. So when you had the opportunity to extend that lease, I think it was a great benefit for the district and to have that voted on. So there's a lot of things that I'm still getting in tune with. I'm sitting here thinking about when I first ran for the Grossmont Union High School District 16 years ago, and I was up against some incumbents. And actually, I love this incumbent. I think he's just an asset to East County. So, you know, it was kind of a different venue in how I started out. But I had to learn a lot, and I'm a quick study, and those who have asked me to run know that about me and appreciate that about me, and that I'm a fighter for taxpayers, right along with those who serve the healthcare district today. So thank you.
I'll just add, too, for the doctors and nurses that might be listening, some of the equipment that we're putting in and upgrading are the fluoroscopic equipment. We're replacing some radiographic rooms, and we're configuring those for better use. And so the doctors and patient satisfaction scores are going up just on that alone. We have a new outpatient infusion center, including chemotherapy, biotherapy, cancer patients, and autoimmune disorders. We'll be treating all that and bold transfers in, you know, hydration for cancer patients, and much more coming.
Okay. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of new things coming down the pipe over at the Sharp Grossmont Hospital here in La Mesa, which serves, of course, all of East County. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we have been speaking with two of the candidates running for the Grossmont Healthcare District Board, Michael Emerson, who's an incumbent, and Priscilla Schreiber, who is a challenger. There are six candidates running, three seats available, and you'll be able to go onto our website at eastcountymagazine.org and find our interviews with all six of the candidates. Grossmont Healthcare District puts on Kids Fair, and I believe that's coming up on November 5th. And I
I remember years ago when we started our partnership with the education side of it, I also was served on the Health and Wellness Committee, and we met at the Healthcare District, and we worked with HSSA and or the
Health and Human Services Agency.
Yeah. So back in 2004, 2005, 2006, I served on the committee where we met at the Healthcare District, and we worked very hard to help educate our students in our own district, and working alongside the Grossmont Healthcare District and HHSA to bring awareness of healthcare issues, as well as to our staff as far as exercising more and things that they could take on, which would reduce their office visits to the healthcare. So,
in closing, and thanking you for the opportunity that we've had to address our constituents in this venue is very nice.
Thank you.
Priscilla's right. The Kids Care Fest is November. She had the date right, but the location is at Lakeside Rodeo. Again,
that's right. You've moved it.
We've moved it there. It's our second year, and it was a great success last year, and we're going to build on that this year. It'll be all day.
Okay.
And then what I wanted to mention was for the marijuana issues, October 10th in the Grossmont Healthcare District Conference Room, we will be having a forum there with the leading research and doctors on the effects of marijuana on the adolescent brain.
Oh, very good. Send us a flyer on that, and maybe we'll try to get a reporter.
I brought you a flyer. And then for those who want to contact me, I'm on Facebook. And you could go to the Grossmont Healthcare District website and get my email address, and or you could call the healthcare district directly, and our administrative assistants will put your message through to me, and I'll be willing to talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Excellent.
And then also one more thing for Balboa Park, 6 a.m. on October 15th, Diane Jacob and I will be co-captain marching for Walk for Alzheimer's.
Excellent. Yeah, she's been quite a leader there in Alzheimer's research and trying to find cures, and with the county program out there, and you know, support for the families dealing with that terribly tragic illness. Well, we are out of time. Okay. I know we could talk all day on a lot of different issues, but I really want to thank both of you, Michael Emerson and Priscilla Schreiber, for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. Thank you, Miriam, for the opportunity. Always a pleasure to do this for our constituents. Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.
A new law signed by Governor Jerry Brown will allow Be on the Lookout bulletins to be issued for people with developmental disabilities or cognitive impairment. An estimated 250,000 people in California have developmental disabilities, putting them at risk if they go missing. Half of the parents surveyed by the National Institutes of Health reported that their children with autism spectrum disorder wandered away from home or their families, and a quarter of those who wandered were missing long enough to be considered in danger. Senate Bill 1330 was sponsored by the United Domestic Workers Union. Doug Moore, executive director of the union, says, "Every minute a loved one is missing is terrifying, and every moment counts. By updating the law's language to include those who are cognitively impaired and people with developmental disabilities, we can give more peace of mind to thousands of families in our state." The union's vice president, Astrid Zuniga, says her own son suffers severe autism and she works as his in-home care provider. As he gets older, he has wandered off. Zuniga concludes, "This bill could save lives by giving police officers a better understanding of who they are looking for." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Kim Cooney.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.